Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We are challenged, as we point out with some regularity on this program, by a, well, diverse and growing numbers of threats to our country, the most serious of which emanate from the Chinese Communist Party. And those are almost certainly going to intensify in the days to come as a result of a party congress that will be taking place in Beijing, China, shortly. That is a conclave where the party, the Chinese Communist Party, that is, leadership meets, and at the end of it, they will, we expect, confer upon the current General Secretary of that party, Xi Jinping, the title of, well, emperor, I guess not in quite so many words, but that will effectively be the upshot of it. A coronation of sorts is in order, presumably as part of the party plenum that follows the party congress. To help us parse all of this, and most especially to make sense of what might come next, I am very pleased to have back with us one of our go-to guys on China, a man I've come to admire and delighted to work with closely as a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, as well as a man who brings to bear an amazing array of skills and experiences as a colonel in the United States Marine Corps, now retired, as a foreign service officer, as a businessman, forward deployed in East Asia, notably in Japan, and is just an incredibly thoughtful and resourceful individual on all of these matters. So with all of that, let me just say, welcome, Colonel Grant Newsom. It's great to have you back to Securing America.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm going to talk mostly with you, I think, in this time we have with you, about a really important piece that you wrote at Japan Forward, entitled "Communist Party's Upcoming Congress is Putting China on the Path to War." As you know, our theory of the piece is that China has actually been at war with us for some time, but there's something now in the offing, and I want you to walk us through it. But before we get to that, let's talk about this party congress and what you expect will, in fact, come of it.
Well, what I think is going to happen is that Xi Jinping, the dictator who runs China, he is going to be sort of put in place, or he's going to be sort of formally anointed as emperor, as you said. He's going to get a third term in office. Previously, you couldn't have more than two. That was the consensus. He changed the rules a few years ago so that he could get a third term. But he'll get a third term and a fourth term, probably, and I think pretty much for life. And this is an important thing to note. It's because there's, for the last, oh goodness, since Mao Zedong, so the last 40 years or 50 years or so, the Chinese have had sort of a consensus up at the top. There's been a, you might compare it to, say, a collection of mob bosses who each agree that none of them is going to be the, get too far ahead. And he's always had rivalry. But now Xi has put himself in a position where he has no real rivals. He has sidelined or imprisoned all his potential opposition. And he is going to come through this Congress anointed as China's supreme leader, the so-called helmsman. And this is a serious thing.
Grant, let me just ask a question, because as we speak, this is before the party Congress, before the plenum, for sure. There were some rumors of turmoil inside China. He disappeared for a period of time. The aircraft flights were stopped. There were reports that he'd actually been removed as the head of the People's Liberation Army, one of the key roles that he currently holds. doesn't seem as though those rumors were accurate, but what did you make of them? And is there a chance that things might not go quite according to script in the Party Congress in plenum?
I think it's a very small chance of that happening. Almost as high, say, as you see a polar bear walk down the street today. It's probably not going to happen. This was
well, with global warming, you never know, Grant. This could be what they're going to do next. But what did you make of those rumors, and was there anything to them?
No, I thought it was wishful thinking. Make no mistake, in China, and at that level of the ruling class, there is plenty of factions, plenty of people who hate each other. And that's always been the case. They're not unique in that regard. But Xi has been very successful over the last 10 years of bringing down and, as I said, imprisoning and just marginalizing his real opponents. And these were very powerful people. So there's always been a lot of opposition. I think people were hoping, and even I was, that somehow it would all realize that their days were numbered if they didn't do something about Xi Jinping. Well, they didn't succeed, even if they tried. So I think he is going to be the guy for the foreseeable future.
One never knows who you're going to get if it is basket upset and there's a do-over. The likelihood in a system like the Chinese Communist Party that you're going to get somebody who is more benign, let alone, you know, going to lead to the end of the tyranny that the party has imposed on the people of China and the threat that it increasingly represents to us was never, I think, in the cards. But there's a real danger with the thug that you know getting more power. And I guess essentially what you're saying, if I understand it, Colonel Newsom, is Xi Jinping, once coronated, if you will be unconstrained, as he presumably has been to some extent to date. And if he is unconstrained, just help us calibrate what are his known ambitions that we should anticipate he will be able and certainly willing to pursue.
Well, if you look back 10 years and just listen to read the speeches that Xi has written, and many of these have not been publicly released, or they've leaked out, or it's been delayed. So the West really hasn't noticed them as much as they should have. But he has very clearly called for the end of capitalism. And he's talking implicitly about the end of the United States and China dominating not just Asia, but the entire world. He's been very clear what he thinks. We've just chosen not to listen to him. So there's the idea he is a closet reformer. You know, forget about that. But as what you've got now is you have a dictator who has eliminated his opposition, and also he sees his objective as being the guy who brings back China to its natural glory, to its proper place at the head of a sort of a hierarchical world, and that he also he sees that as his duty, and he sees it as his mission, as you might say, and he also has the capability now. He's got the military that, at least within the areas immediately around China, for now, they can make life pretty miserable for people, and they can grab territory within the so-called first island chain, which goes from Japan down to Taiwan, the Philippines, and then onto Malaysia. So he's got both desire and he has capability. And if he doesn't get what he wants by intimidation, then I would not be surprised to see him use force. And that is something that we have not seen. So, as I said, in the past, there's never been a Chinese leader like this since Mao Zedong. They've all been sort of restrained. But now the restraints seem to be off. And as I said, the capability is there. And he's also been going about getting China ready for a war.
And that's what I want to turn to with you next on the other side of a very short break. Colonel Grant Newsom, you've made the point that war may not be restricted to Taiwan or even to our allies, but involve our own assets, personnel, and territory, perhaps, as well. We'll be visiting with Colonel Newsom about all of that more right after this. We'll be right back. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The world's largest and most dangerous transnational criminal organization will meet in Beijing this weekend to glorify its unprecedented power and consolidate that of its leader, the ultimate gangster, or in mafia parlance, the capo di tutti capi. The meeting is formally known as the Chinese Communist Party's 20th Party Congress, with its expected conferring of an unprecedented third term as General Secretary on Xi Jinping. His dictatorship will likely become a lifelong one, with effectively no domestic constraints. It's hard to overstate the danger that will represent, both for the enslaved Chinese people and the rest of us whom Xi is determined to conquer and treat even worse. Our Committee on the Present Danger China will co-sponsor live truth-telling counter-programming starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday night on Real America's Voice. Join us as we crash the Party Congress. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we are visiting with Colonel Grant Newsom, a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, a man whose acumen and expertise is, well, very highly refined and informed by a lot of experience in Asia. And that is as a colonel in the United States Marine Corps, as a Foreign Service officer, and as a enterprising businessman as well. And Colonel, you finished up that last block with a very ominous forecast, which is that Xi Jinping will be unconstrained once he has this third term or emperorship status for life confirmed by a party congress coming up shortly. He has made no secret of his ambitions. They are not good for us as well as others. And I wanted to ask you about a piece of this that has come to light recently in an official way. When one looks at the ambitions to dominate the world, which requires the elimination of the United States as an impediment to their realization, Xi Jinping has been putting into place not only internally, but now increasingly externally, mechanisms that Sir Jeremy Fleming, who is the head of the British Signals Intelligence Organization, known as GCHQ, has warned us in a very public and very direct way, is now a threat to all of us. He's essentially talking about the social credit system and the advanced technologies that are utilized by it to both control, monitor, yes, but also control the people of China, and now as an export item are being fashioned in a way that will enable certainly other governments and probably the Chinese Communist Party as well to exercise control far more broadly. Talk us through what this kind of use of technology represents and how it ties into the sort of strategy for world domination of which you've spoken.
Well, it's all about control when it comes to China. And that's the thing to keep in mind. And first, it's control over your own people. You look at the system they have put in place in China, and you're seeing it on display, actually, with the so-called zero COVID effort, where they're locking cities of 25 million people down. They've imprisoned people and very violently sort of dealt with them, arrested people, beaten them up, barge into their houses, lock them in there, dwelled them in their houses. As I say, it's all about control. And there's a financial, if you want to control people, you want to be able to control what they can say, what they can think. You want to control their access to money, to access to food, access to any of the things that we take as really freedoms. And that is what you see in the People's Republic of China. If you want a taste of what's coming, that's where you look. And, you know, you look at things and it's, as you said, Frank, they've exported this and to some willing recipients in some cases. And I would point to the truckers' protests in Canada.
Before we go there, just an aside, I think, you know, it's implicit in what you've said, but it needs to be emphasized. Any country that treats its own people this badly, and you know, the social credit system is just sort of the tip of the whole oppressive, indeed, in some cases, genocidal tyranny that the Chinese Communist Party inflicts. But it's not going to treat ours any better. That's for sure. And arguably even worse. So take that to the next step, sir. How the exporting of this technology and capability, especially if it's got back doors that the Chinese can exploit, what does that mean for us?
Well, that's always been the sort of the issue, as I said, is control. And sort of the, and you're seeing the will, as I said, and the scary thing really is the willingness of foreigners to accept this. And as I mentioned, Canada, the trucker strike, you saw that the government seized people's bank accounts. They used PayPal, you know, to prevent, you know, money from being transferred, etc. And this was scary stuff to see. You see the canceling, the way that high-tech companies are, you know, censoring ideas and people they don't like, effectively banning them. What you've got is really the technical...
And the China model with respect to this pandemic, which has been embraced thanks to the World Health Organization and Fauci and others, that includes the digital passports, which are the, you know, platform for the social credit system.
Well, that's what you said. And that's the worrisome thing, is that it's now technically capable to do what dictators and thugs have always wanted to do, and totalitarians, is to have complete control over other human beings. And I say technically, it's possible. And that is the frightening thing. And then you combine this with a very potent military and a sort of rapacious economy that a lot of Westerners can't get enough of. And you combine these things, and it is probably one of the scariest times, that certainly in my lifetime.
Let me ask you, Colonel, because you think strategically, if in addition to all that we've been talking about, you also have a capacity that the Chinese have put into place to operate truly globally. Some are countries that are taking aboard this social credit system, but many are taking loans from the Chinese that enable the Chinese to build out infrastructure that may or may not advantage the countries in question, most of which are third world nations and struggling, but that will certainly benefit the Chinese Communist Party, especially if they're able to foreclose on those payday loans that can't get fulfilled. So you have ports, you have airfields, you have road networks, rail networks, you have access to minerals and other resources worldwide, and territory from which to project power. That's bad enough. But in addition to that, we now have these so-called overseas Chinese police service centers, which are terrifying communities of Chinese nationals, some of whom are being exfiltrated through them back home to an uncertain, probably unsavory fate, but also sending an unmistakable message to the rest of that community that they will conform to the dictates of Beijing. And that may mean, as Xi has made clear, they will play their role in the service of the motherland if, in fact, the war comes. So connect those dots for us as well, and how further ominous all of this is.
Well, you're setting up your opponent. And before the war starts, you may not even need a war, actually. And it's very good strategy from their point, the Chinese point of view. And it's not just the overseas Chinese community. And it's heartbreaking what is happening to these people and what the democracies and the United States is allowing to happen. And we could stop it
on
tomorrow.
Their territories.
It's outrageous. But the another thing to keep in mind is the fifth columnist that China has successfully recruited in the West, in the civilized West, you know, the Wall Street, the business community. We've talked about this before, but when there's a there's a certain, that's what you'd call it. And I recommend reading some of the work that you all have done, Peter Schweitzer's book as well. But when you've got this dependency that you created amongst the so-called elites, social elites, political, financial elites in a country, that gives you a huge advantage. And you wear down your enemy to the point he just may give up, particularly when faced with a seemingly unstoppable military force. And that is something that we really ought to be concerned about. But it has been a multifaceted, multi-front war that they have been prosecuting now. And it is all about control. If you want to understand Chinese politics, et cetera, and how, watch The Sopranos. Just watch a season of The Sopranos, and you will know an awful lot about how that system works and what it intends to do.
The capo de tutti capi, I think is how they call it, is Xi Jinping, and we'll be watching with considerable concern what he's up to next. Grant Newsom, thank you so much for joining us, Colonel. Your service to our country is deeply appreciated, including that you're rendering now. Keep up the great work, my friend. Mm-hmm. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to talk about some of those elites been captured, including Larry Fink of BlackRock, with Will Hill of Consumers Research, right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. One of the things that we were talking about with Colonel Grant Newsom that is a perennial concern, I think, for those of us who are monitoring what the Chinese Communist Party is doing to try to take down our country, is the extent to which they have engaged in what they call elite capture. A poster child for the phenomenon, it seems to me, is a fellow by the name of Larry Fink. He is the chairman of, well, the 800-ton gorilla on Wall Street, a company called BlackRock. Its investment portfolio, as I understand it, at least at last count, was something on the order of $10 trillion. Maybe somewhat smaller as a result of what's been going on in Wall Street of late, but Larry Fink is a big deal in the capital markets, both in this country and internationally. And few people understand better not only that reality, but the malevolent purposes to which Larry Fink has been putting his power. Power basically invested literally in him by Americans who, I think, by and large, have no idea what is his agenda. And so we're always delighted to have a chance to visit with Will Hild. He is the executive director of a terrific organization, Consumers Research. He has been very, very creatively and doggedly trying to raise an alarm, literally raise warnings about BlackRock, what it is doing, and what is the agenda of its Uberfuhrer, if I can use that expression, Larry Fink. And it's a delight to be able to catch up with him at a moment when, for reasons we'll be talking about, I think his efforts are really bearing some very important fruit. Thank him for that, and also welcome him back. Will, it's terrific to have you once again.
Thanks for having me again.
So just set the stage for us a little bit. I've sort of outlined in broad detail, I guess, the dramatis personae, but remind us who Larry Fink is and what BlackRock under his leadership is about.
Certainly. Larry Fink is the CEO of the largest investment management firm in the world, BlackRock. Manages, as you noted, over $10 trillion in assets, although with the recent market drawdown, that's significantly lower now, probably around 8.5, but it's still the largest. And that's made up of all kinds of dollars. So you've got state, local, and even federal pension funds. Unfortunately, for reasons I'll explain momentarily, they manage 80% of the Federal Thrift Savings Plan. That's the pension fund for federal workers and for the U.S. military. And what do they use those dollars for? Well, unfortunately, they use them to deliver a 1-2 punch to the American economy and the American citizen. On one hand, here in the United States, they push so-called ESG investing, meaning environmental, social, and governance, which is really just a Trojan horse for injecting politics into the corporate boardroom. And it takes corporate executives here in the United States, it takes their eye off of the ball of pursuing profits and competitiveness. And importantly to us, it takes them off of the ball in serving the American consumers. So the American consumer loses out because these people are kowtowing to Larry Fink instead of trying to serve their customers. And then the second punch, as you alluded to, is that they cozy up to the Chinese Communist Party overseas. And so those same ESG standards they push here in the United States, they don't push those same standards in the Chinese Communist mainland. They instead funnel hundreds of billions, if not trillions, of U.S. investment dollars into Chinese communist-owned companies, even companies that develop products for mass surveillance and the Chinese communist military. So that's the 1-2 punch. They hamstring domestic corporations here, making them less competitive and less responsive to the customer base. And they prop up our biggest geopolitical rival, the Chinese Communist Party.
We're going to drill down on all of that. But just an overall observation, it would be bad enough if there were just this seeming disconnect between that so-called ESG agenda, environment, social justice, governance agenda, and their investment in China. But it's actually the case that in China, they don't have any use for any of that stuff. They're despoiling the environment like nobody else in the world. Social justice is not exactly what anybody's entitled to under the Chinese Communist Party. And the governance stuff is the only governance is that of the Chinese Communist Party, of course. They're not interested in diversity, ideological or otherwise. So hypocrisy is among the charges that has been leveled by, I think, you among others at Larry Fink. But beyond that, there's this question of fiduciary duty. And I think this is where you've done such important work. Talk a little bit about how Larry Fink's conduct, as you say, sort of the stakeholder capitalism versus shareholder capitalism, is actually translating into adverse impacts on the people he's managing funds for.
Absolutely. Well, as I noted, BlackRock manages hundreds of billions, probably trillions of dollars, certainly the federal pension plan, trillions of dollars of other people's money, money that's supposed to be there to make sure that America's teachers and firefighters and cops don't have to eat cat food during their retirement. And instead of making the return on those investments the focus of his work, he's made pushing these political priorities. So we started calling him out for that in October of last year. We launched an ongoing multi-million dollar ad campaign, noting not just the hypocrisies that we've talked about, but also the ways in which he's materially undermining the interests of American citizens. So let me take a couple of specific cases. One, he's serially underinvested in American energy production, fossil fuel production. And so that has hurt pension fund returns that have focused on other less economically viable types of energy production, like solar and wind. This, of course, at the same time, And he's been more than happy to finance and fund developments of those same types of projects in mainland China. So while Chinese investors have made out very well, coal plants, pipelines, that kind of thing have been developed in China using BlackRock investment dollars or BlackRock managed investment dollars. Here in the United States, we have serially underinvested for the last decade because of ESG standards and this ESG scam in energy.
Let me just interrupt because I want to just highlight this point. As I understand it, that evidently with help from BlackRock, China has been bringing online something like a coal-fired power plant a week.
Yes.
At a moment when we're shutting ours down, we're sowing salt in the ground, if you will, metaphorically, in anything having to do with coal, and for that matter, to varying degrees, other fossil fuels as well. Again, this is beyond hypocrisy. This is going to depriving the American people who are now being subjected to brownouts and even blackouts, base load power that is reliable, that is cost effective, and that is clean.
Yes.
At a moment when dirty coal-fired power plants are being built at a breakneck speed in China.
Absolutely.
And by the way, the downwind from them is us, it turns out.
Right, right. It doesn't really matter where. A lot of it is a shell game to begin with. So even the solar and wind panels solar panels and wind farms that they are pushing, much of that is produced in mainland China. And the carbon intensive production cycle that is required is usually not calculated in the overall carbon output of those solar panels. So it's really just a shell game as to where you're putting the carbon emissions for some of this products. But as you noted, and that's is a very key point that I think is very important to bring up. It is undermining the integrity of our entire electrical grid. BlackRock is a member of a group called Climate Action 100. This is a coalition of investors that pressure organizations, companies that they target, about 180 companies that they've targeted, to reach net zero targets by 2050. And one of the demands that they make is to put a mothball date on all of their natural gas, if it's a utility, for example, all of their natural gas electric producing plants. What that is going to do is deprive our grid of the baseline load that it requires to stay active. Our grid in the United States is not just a matter of meeting supply with demand. It has to operate within certain parameters. And if you go lower than the floor, meaning you cannot reach the baseline load, you have to shut down the grid. And we saw that in Texas during the unprecedented winter storms that they had. They were unable, because of the locking up of their wind farms and their solar panels that weren't operating, the cyclicality of that energy production brought them lower than their baseline load. And even though natural gas plants were skyrocketing in use to make up for that, they were actually compensating for the unreliability of these boondoggle solar panels and wind farms. Ultimately, it wasn't enough. And so they had to go to blackouts. And a lot of people, some people died. Many people's homes, the pipes froze and exploded.
I was told actually that they were within
economic vandalism that BlackRock has committed on our country.
Yeah, I was told that they actually got to a point where they were within hours, if not minutes, of an irrecoverable problem for their electricity.
Absolutely, you're 100% right. If they were within one more natural gas plant of having any problem, had they had any issue with it, had to turn it off, the entire grid would have had to been shut down, or transformers would have blown. And it would have been months before the entire Texas grid was back. That's how close to catastrophe they came. And it was attributable directly to the cyclicality of this solar and wind nonsense that BlackRock has forced. And at the same time, has tried to push utility producers away from natural gas, which can be spun up and down as needed. So at the same time that they're helping strengthen Chinese energy production, they are costing consumers more and putting us in a position where an absolute catastrophe could occur.
Yeah. Will, I want to come back to this point because it's vital. We have to take a very short break, but when we're on the other side of it, I want to just ask you about steps that BlackRock is taking to not only use their own money in these ways, but also to cut off funding from other sources to the fossil fuel industry as well. That and more with Will Hill of Consumers Research right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The world's largest and most dangerous transnational criminal organization will meet in Beijing this weekend to glorify its unprecedented power and consolidate that of its leader, the ultimate gangster, or in mafia parlance, the capo di tutti capi. The meeting is formally known as the Chinese Communist Party's 20th Party Congress. With its expected conferring of an unprecedented third term as General Secretary on Xi Jinping, his dictatorship will likely become a lifelong one, with effectively no domestic constraints. It's hard to overstate the danger that will represent, both for the enslaved Chinese people and the rest of us whom Xi is determined to conquer and treat even worse. Our Committee on the Present Danger China will co-sponsor live truth-telling counter-programming starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday night on Real America's Voice. Join us as we crash the Party Congress. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. Will Hild of Consumers Research is in the house virtually. I'm very pleased to have him with us always, but especially when he is able to report on progress being made by campaigns he has been running with his outfit against one of the preeminent figures in American finance and a man of, as a result, disproportionate influence in all kinds of other industries, and also with our politicians. Larry Fink is his name. His company is called BlackRock. And you've set the predicate for my next line of questioning with you beautifully, Will. I wanted to ask you, in addition to essentially compelling companies through the manipulation of BlackRock's investment of its clients' money in the companies to do their bidding, to stop their basic business, to change it, to put people on the board who don't agree with the basic, role of the company and so on. But they're also utilizing their ability to reach into financial firms and into, the various payment services and all kinds of other things to further garrote people who are doing the sorts of things that they don't care for, but that are, well, vital to our national security, certainly our economic well-being, notably in the energy sector. Talk a little bit about that sort of knock-on effect that they are also achieving.
Certainly. Well, as I noted in the previous segment, they're a member of something called Climate Action 100, which is a consortium of asset managers that all agree to coordinate their activities, which on a side note, I think is a massive antitrust violation. But they all agree to coordinate their activities to target certain companies and force them to try to meet Paris Accord net zero by 2050 targets, which would be economic and maybe literal suicide for our country. In addition to that, they also brag about co-leading an organization called the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, or GFANZ for short. This is a consortium not just of asset managers, but also banks and insurers who've committed to the same. And so you have banks like Citibank and JP Morgan and Bank of America who've agreed to use their lending portfolio to force companies to meet net zero targets. But it goes even farther than that. Because of BlackRock's assessment of ESG scores and the outsized weight that they have in the market, they can also target companies who don't go along with progressive social values. So you mentioned payment processors like PayPal, for example. PayPal tries to cozy up to BlackRock and other ESG leaders by doing things like what we just found out about this weekend, where they had added a clause to their user agreement that would allow them to fine users for quote unquote spreading misinformation. They'd already announced that they were
$2,500.
Exactly, $2,500. And this is a company, by the way, that had already announced that they were going to be working with the incredibly corrupt and slanderous organization, the Anti-Defamation League, to target people who, don't go along with the progressive Orwellian, whatever you want to call it, basically.
The narrative and the agenda.
We're going to attack the mob, basically. I've
been there myself.
People who don't toe the line. And so these are all things that companies like, you know, you're seeing this come out of Silicon Valley, I think, because so many of these companies lose money year over year. They are hooked on getting new VC funding, getting new money out of Wall Street. And so while they can't rely on their fundamentals because they don't have good profits or a good balance sheet, they rely on cozying up to companies like BlackRock to boost their ESG scores. And so they have to go along with doing nonsense like this. And when I spoke before about ways in which this takes this activity by BlackRock forces corporate America to suck up to Larry Fink instead of serving their consumers, this is a perfect example of a company that is basically committing suicide with its consumers. I mean, they've lost 5-6% of their market value just in the last day since this news came out. It's absurd. But you can see the logic of what they're doing when you look at the activities of BlackRock and Larry Fink, the way they're pushing these progressive social values that are just out of step with the American consumer.
Yeah. It's bad enough that they're not serving their consumers. They're not even serving the people who own the company, their shareholders. Right. This is at the core of all of this.
Exactly.
So much to explore here with you. Talk a little bit about your current campaign about BlackRock and also the consumer's warning that you issued in the previous one.
Absolutely. So we just launched the third phase of our attack on BlackRock. This is an ongoing campaign to educate the American consumer about the ways that BlackRock is undermining their interests and the nation's interests. And the newest iteration is that it can be found at aboutblackrock.com, where you'll see our television ad, and it's run both on nationally TV and also digitally. And you can see the consumer warning that we put out. This is a deep dive, about a 7-8-page document that fully goes through in a detailed manner all of the things we've been talking about. So if people are hearing me and thinking, wow, this sounds outrageous. I can't believe this company is doing this. Well, you can go on that website, aboutblackrock.com, and find out more of the details of the ways in which BlackRock is undermining your interests, in many cases using your own money. And so it's not just BlackRock. You know, Larry Fink is certainly, I would love to have his bank account, but he's not that wealthy, relatively speaking. He's got about $1 billion. Where his power comes from is that he's investing your dollars. He's investing American pension dollars, local, state, federal. He's American institutional dollars, like university endowments are often managed by BlackRock. So there's a myriad of ways, even if someone doesn't have a 401k, although they should make sure their 401k is not invested in BlackRock. If they are on the board of a university, they should make sure that that endowment is not being managed by BlackRock. And they should be asking some very serious questions to the managers, whoever they use, to make sure that ESG is not being pushed, because it's going to hurt returns for the university. It's a violation of the fiduciary duty for them to do this. But also, it's going to be undermining the interests of the country.
In addition to those kinds of institutional investors, BlackRock has had its hooks into pension funds. You mentioned earlier the Federal Thrift Retirement Fund, known as the Thrift Savings Plan. Also at state levels, including states whose vital interests are very closely tied to a prosperous energy sector. And we're going to talk on the other side of our final short break with Will Hild about a state that has stepped up and said enough of BlackRock. And it's a model for what other investors, institutional and individual, should be doing in response to Will Hild's outfit's very important consumer warning about BlackRock. We'll talk about all of that and more right after this short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. We are visiting with Will Hild, the executive director of an indispensable organization. It is Consumers Research. It has been mounting a very creative and very tenacious campaign to try to raise an alarm about what an awful lot of Americans, most of us completely unwittingly, are having done against our vital interests, contrary to our values, and perhaps even endangering our national security by allowing an outfit called BlackRock, run by a fellow by the name of Larry Fink, to invest the funds as he sees fit. And Will, you've mentioned your current campaign about BlackRock.com, which I really commend to people to see these very high quality ads and the documentation that you use to back up the allegations you're making about Fink and BlackRock and so on. And what I'm anxious to get at is, when you put out a consumer warning about what this company and its leadership are doing, tell us the basis, I mean, specifically, of that warning, and especially as it relates, talked a lot about ESG, but as it relates to underwriting our most mortal enemy in the history of the country, namely the Chinese Communist Party.
Certainly. Well, this is our second consumer warning. We've actually done two. And the first one we put out in December of last year. And it was on that specific issue of just their entanglements with China, BlackRock's entanglements with China, and the ways in which they were using U.S. pension dollars to prop up that corrupt regime. And we sent that letter out to the governors of the 10 states that had the most money, the most pension dollars being managed by BlackRock. I'm happy to say that just 3 weeks later, Governor DeSantis in Florida ordered a top to bottom audit of that state's pension funds and any equity or any investment that they had in mainland China. He also revoked the ability for any of the pension funds asset managers to vote the proxies, to exercise the power of the shares on behalf of the state. Since then, we've seen a number of different other state officials take action. We've seen the West Virginia treasurer put BlackRock on a banned list. They're no longer allowed to do business with any subsidiary with the state or any subsidiary of the state. And more recently, we saw the Louisiana treasurer move to divest themselves of $500 million that was being managed by BlackRock. I'm encouraged. I think we're going to see, this is really the beginning of this push. I think you're going to see state after state after state say enough is enough. BlackRock, you are no longer going to be doing business for this state. We've seen Texas, I should mention as well, Comptroller Hager recently put them on a banned list. They are no longer, like West Virginia, they are no longer allowed to do business with the state or its subsidiaries. And it's a long time coming. We've seen BlackRock, and this is how direct they have been in undermining the people's interests whose money they manage. There's a company called Duke Energy. It's a utility player in the Southeast United States, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, producing electricity. And last year, the New York City comptroller, which, long story short, has become one of the biggest pushers of this nonsense, put on two shareholder proposals that were aimed at hurting that company and forcing them to adhere to net zero targets, which is going to substantially raise the costs of electricity production for the citizens in those states. And BlackRock
and make it less reliable as well. What's that? Well, and make it less reliable.
Make it less reliable at the exact same time. And get this, BlackRock voted for both of those proposals at the same time that they were managing $9.3 billion of South Carolina's pension fund. So here you have somebody who has a fiduciary duty to the citizens and the pensioners of the state of South Carolina, and they're using those assets to push shareholder proposals at the corporate level that are in direct contradiction to the interests of those state citizens. That's how bad this is. And at the same time, they're sucking up to the Chinese Communist Party and building them all the coal plants and pipelines that they would like. So it really is, the rot is incredible. It is a direct violation of the fiduciary duty. And it's also an ethical moral a violation, because they have a moral obligation to be helping the citizens of the United States. So it really goes as bad as it can get.
Let me put a fine point on it, because I think your story about South Carolina is illustrative of the larger point. If the grid becomes less reliable in South Carolina because Duke Energy is forced to go to less reliable means of providing that power, people will die. If the Chinese Communist Party is able to take portions of the trillions of dollars that, as you mentioned, BlackRock and its friends, it's not the only one, unfortunately, but it's a leading force in Wall Street to provide our money to the Chinese communists. And if even a small portion of that money migrates directly into the People's Liberation Army and its weapons acquisition programs, people will die. our men and women in uniform, and probably large numbers of the rest of us for that matter. So, Will, your warnings and your advocacy here is singularly important, it seems to me, and a real patriotic service to our country. And I'm so gratified, and I'm sure you are, by what you've just been able to share with us in terms of some of these state pension funds and others coming alongside and saying enough already. The Thrift Savings Plan is an exception. Larry Fink has engineered a departure from what Donald Trump quite sensibly said, which is we're not going to put federal retirees, military and civilian, and for that matter, government workers at the moment, money into China. And Larry Fink has engineered a workaround that is getting that money sent there all the same. This is outrageous. I hope that this will continue to be an important focus of your work at Consumers Research, and I thank you for that. Any concluding comment?
Well, I appreciate you having me on and helping me to articulate all of these real issues. We're not going to stop. We're going to continue to educate consumers across the nation on the ways in which BlackRock is undermining their interests. And we're not going to stop until this issue is diffused. BlackRock has disarmed and defanged and no longer propping up the Chinese Communist Party. I will say one thing. We've talked a lot about all the investment dollars that BlackRock is exporting to China. They are importing one thing back, and that is the censorship strategies of the Chinese Communist Party. That those two Duke energy proposals I mentioned, well, one of them was aimed at making sure the company was not allowed to speak out publicly against net zero targets. So here they are exporting our investment dollars and importing Chinese communist censorship.
This is a
full service operation. We're going to keep raising the alarm.
Full service operation for the Chinese Communist Party. Thank you. Keep it up. Come back to us with updates if you would as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Thanks to the rest of you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. I hope you feel better equipped to do just that and that you will now go forth and multiply.